following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Keeping It Real with former NFL wide receiver and Auburn University standout, Jairus McIntyre. Are you ready to hear it live from the athletes, celebrities, and fans? Jairus, his co-hosts, and his guests will keep you laughing, thinking, and talking. Now, here's your host, Jairus McIntyre.
What's going on, world? It's your boy, J-Mac, back in the building, here for another edition of Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Jairus McIntyre. Down here in lovely Tampa, Florida. Fresh off Mr. Cam Newton's Heisman Trophy. Congratulations to the big homie Cam Newton, becoming the third Heisman Trophy winner from Auburn University. I got my special co-host on the line, Ron Mack, as well as former Auburn Tiger offensive line standout. Was one of the starting offensive linemen for the 2004 undefeated Auburn Tigers, Mr. Troy Reddick. What's going on, Troy Reddick?
Hey, man, I'm here, man.
That's what's up, man. So I haven't had a chance to too much talk to you about this magical season that they got going on. Obviously, you were a part of Auburn's probably last magical season, which was in 2004, and you guys had an outstanding team and outstanding offensive line. I want to talk to you and mainly ask you about this year's offensive line, because I know that they have an All-American in Lee Zimba, a great center, two good guards, and a young right tackle that's been holding his own. From what you see from this dominating offensive line this year, kind of give me some similarities to the offensive line that you guys had in 2004, if there are any similarities.
Well, I'm going to shift from popular opinion of the whole blindside deal. I understand that Lee Zimba won the Jacobs Blocking Trophy Award this year and Marcus won in my year. But when you're talking about basically a rushing team, it starts with your guards. You know what I'm saying? Your center is picking the point. He's picking the mic back or whoever it is. And your guards are the ones who are leading you downfield. And you saw that this year with Auburn. Their guards are in the end zone picking guys up off the field, down, you know, saying downfield. Your guards get downfield like that, you're going to have a lot of big-time rushing game. You're going to control the clock. You're going to physically dominate people. As far as the structure of it, I mean, what you have is a veteran group. You have four seniors and a junior from a junior college who's probably one of the bigger and more stronger guys on the group. So he was able to fit in very well this year, especially playing in the SEC with a rushing offense like that.
Okay. Now Ron Mack, kind of to switch the subject a little bit, and speaking of Cameron Newton and the Heisman ceremony and him bringing home the Heisman Trophy to the Auburn family, to the Auburn nation, and there were some people that left Cam off of their ballots. Not some, a lot, actually. Didn't even turn in to vote for Cam Newton. Do you think that's just pure craziness? or do you think they have a valid reason to have left probably one of the best college football players in the history off of a ballot?
I don't think they have a valid reason, but I think most of them did it because, you know, we're so fresh off the Reggie Bush turning in his Heisman deal to where, you know, people kind of want to play God, want to say, well, I want to be able to say, you know, if something happens down the line, well, he didn't get my vote. I was one of the 105 or 103 people who left him completely off my ballot, which is ridiculous because he has been the most dominating college football player I have seen in my 33 years of living.
Yeah. Now, with that being said, Troy, do you feel that they should change the way they do this Heisman thing? I mean, because obviously, yes, the best player won. And I just think it should have been – I think the votes should have been not even as close as they were, in my opinion. Yes, Andrew Luck is a good player, but from what Cam Newton did and from anybody that you even hear, you know, speaking on TV, any analyst, any former player, any former Heisman player, even the people that were at the ceremony as a LaMichael James that would even say, hey, I'm voting for Cam, or a Kellen Moore that said, hey, I'll probably vote for Cam. Do you think there should be a different way that they do this Heisman Trophy? Do you think the players should actually get a vote? Do you think the fans should be involved? Do you think there's a different? Do you think they should go about it a different way than the way they've been doing it for the last, what, 7 years?
Well, any other way that we come up with it will just convolute it the same way that it is. But I think when you have the Heisman voting, you start with the fact that you look at these guys as superhuman, some sort of superheroes, basically. And the superhero is only as good as his opponent. And the SEC West was the toughest conference in college football. Not the SEC, not the Big 12, Big 10, Pac-10. The SEC West itself as a 16 unit was tougher than any other conference in college football, and he just basically dominated. He dominated that. He dominated the biggest challenge that anybody could face this year. And as a quarterback who has the physicality that he is, yes, he should have been the highest voted ever for the Heisman. But the more interesting stat to that, as opposed to the people, the 102 guys who left him off the ballot, basically, you want to hear what the other Heisman winners voted. I want to see if all the other Heisman winners were unanimously voted for him, basically. That's what I want to see.
And with that being said, I think an actual person that was a former player rather than just an analyst, regardless if they played in high school, college, or whatever. But for the most part, if you're a former player and you've been, I'll say, through the SEC, or you played in a big-time college conference, or even in a black college, and see what somebody like Cam Newton has done throughout the year, like you said, in the SEC West, which every team for the most part was ranked in the SEC West with the exception of Ole Miss, and he, like you said, he dominated specifically those games. If you look at the Arkansas game, dominated. LSU game, dominated. Alabama game, from, you know, coming from 24 to nothing down, dominated. The Mississippi State game, he played a pretty good game. Didn't dominate that game, but that was his first, you know, road SEC game. Ole Miss game, caught a touchdown. So for the most part, the games that truly counted, he dominated. So it wasn't an argument. You know, he got his Heisman. I was just kind of shocked to see people leaving him off the ballot and things of that nature. Now, Troy, I kind of wanted to ask you this question because I asked somebody else, and I've been asking some of the former players that played in 2004. Obviously, they have one more game left, this team. But in 2004, you guys finished off 13-0, and this year's team is 13-0. And you guys had a high-powered offense, great defense. This year's team has a tremendous offense, as well as a defense that's coming along. The two teams matched up. Obviously, you're an offensive lineman for the 04 team, so I'm pretty sure you may say, more than likely, you're going to say the 04 team will win. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, basically, what you had in the 04 team is an offensive line that could run on anybody in the country and anybody to ever play the game of football. My dream matchup, and the reason why I went to a school like Auburn that wasn't a powerhouse program, is because I wanted to play the powerhouse programs. Everybody around me, coming from South Georgia, is Florida State, Florida, Miami, Georgia. And I'm like, okay, these are the big guys. Alabama's the big guys. I want to go to a mid-range school in a tough conference and take that program to the prime time, and that's basically what happened. The 2002 class is more significant than any class to ever come about, because you have to look at the standpoint of what O'Leary tried to do, falsifying his resume, going to Notre Dame, trying to go to Notre Dame, and losing their top recruiter, Mack McWhorter, to Texas after they didn't give him the job at Georgia Tech. A week later, Steve Spurrier left Florida, and then you had a guy, Tyrone Willingham, who was heavy recruiting in the South and getting a lot of top players with good educational backgrounds to come to Stanford. He goes to Notre Dame then. Well, you have a mix-up. Coming into the 2002 season, Auburn only had one recruit two days before signing. They ended up with a top-five recruiting class, and that group pretty much changed everything that happened. I just happen to think that we had star players already there, and that's what I went there for. But that 2002 class, you're talking about, I say, two guys off the offensive line, four receivers, three of the best defensive specialists on the team or whatever were in that particular junior class, the undefeated season. And we were the reason, and we were dominant at our positions. This offensive line could run on anybody in the country. So the only matchup that I would have saw us against is that 2001 Miami team. That's who I wanted.
Let me ask you this. And obviously, in 04, obviously, the 2000 class you talk about, yes, I was there when you guys all came in, and that was a great class. I'm talking about this 04 team. I mean, now this team, with probably the best player, arguably, in Auburn football history behind the helm, and a great offensive scheme. You don't think it would be a shootout? You don't think that this team would make a run for the money to defeat that 0-4 team?
Well,
because me personally, I think that, and I had the breakdown, I've been talking about it with a whole bunch of different players from the 0-4 team, and I had the breakdown, and I was like, I wouldn't just say the 0-4 team would win for sure. It's going to be a knockdown, drag out, maybe shootout.
Maybe a shootout, but for everything that I said, that we can run the ball on everybody, we could do what no other team in college football could do against Auburn this year. We could keep Cam Newton off the field. We basically could line up and run all the way down the field and limit his time on the field to about 25 minutes.
Yeah. Now, Ron Mack.
Yes.
Ron Mack, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Now, with that being said, with Mr. Troy Reddick thinking that they would run on anybody, and I agree with that. They with that offensive line they have from Troy to Big Marcus McNeil and the whole unit. What do you think Big Nick Fairley would have to say about that matchup?
Well, we talked about this last week. It would be a good game, a good matchup. But to me, this year's team has the best college football player that I've ever seen, and they have one of the most creative offensive minds in the game. So much so to, I think he's now today starting on a new $1.3 million contract for offensive coordinator. So I think the coaching on the offensive side of the football for Auburn this year would help propel them, this year's team, over the 04 team, because I think the coaching was kind of shoddy in 04. They played games close that shouldn't have even been close. The talent, you know, Auburn's talent was so good, so much better than other people's, that, you know, the reason why the 04 team didn't get a chance was because they didn't blow people out like they should have. So that, and the fact that they lost, that in 02 and 03, they lost to USC, lost to them at home, and then lost to them out there in California. So people was kind of like, okay, well, we're going to jump Auburn. But Auburn then lost to USC in 02 and 03, and now in 04, we're going to jump Oklahoma for them to get them a rematch in the national championship game when USC pushed them around at home.
Yeah,
so, that's understandable. But what you look at is exactly everything that I said. That 2002 draft class matured in 04. That was their team. You know, you had star seniors on that squad who were there 3 years prior and had done nothing close to that undefeated season. Now you take a whole group of signing class that lost 10 guys after the freshman year on the defensive side and come in. They mature in the 04 season. And what happened in the 04 season was the only close game was LSU. Tennessee made it look close in the SEC championship, but the only close game was LSU. We were putting up 21 points on guys in the first quarter, and we just ran the clock out, basically.
Let me ask you this, Troy. With that being said, and we talk about the 04 team, I think a good point Ron Mack brings up is if we have a coaching staff. No knock on whoever offensive coordinator was in 2003, but we had probably more talent in 2003 than 2004 because we had the same players adding a couple, you know, a couple different people on offense and a lot of players on defense. But with that being said, I think that coaching was a big part of, you know, the 04 team coming together as a whole, particularly in the offense, because we had still the linemen and a Troy Reddick and a Marcus McNeil, and you know, we had Danny Lindsay out there, and we had some of, for the most part, the same players. I just think that the way Al Borges came in and kind of utilized Ronnie Brown and Cadillac together and kind of opened up the pass game a little bit and put people in the positions to make plays, I think that helped tremendously for the 04 team. But in 2003, as well as even 2002, your freshman year, I think talent-wise, there was more talent on those two teams. I mean, would you agree with that, or would you disagree with that?
On the defensive side of the ball, you cannot replace. Basically, what has to happen in college football with the Cam Newtons, the Ryan Mallets, these big time quarterbacks with big time arms and some mobility, you need the Carlos Dansbys, the Dontarius Thomases. That's why I knew the Alabama game would be a good matchup for Auburn, because they had Dante Hightower. You need these big linebackers back in the game. You're going to have to go to a 3-4 to stop the spread. As far as talent, though, I think the 0-4 team, it was more talent on the defensive side. Al Borges definitely was the difference, but the only reason that Jason Campbell was prepared to be successful in the Al Borges offense was Coach Enzeminger, who helped develop Mike Bobo at UGA. He came in and had the quarterbacks working out like they were actually football players. Because I'm from the school of thought of Fran Tarkenton that quarterbacks aren't football players, but Cam Newton is a football player.
But I think I just think that in 1 year, yes, Jason Campbell was always a good quarterback, but I just think that 1 year that Al Borges came in, regardless of what Enzeminger did. Because I think if Enzeminger's hands were hands-on, he was so good at what he was doing, then Jason Campbell, his junior year, would have, you know, been the way he was his senior year. Then going into his senior year, he would have been a Heisman Trophy candidate, and he would have finished his Auburn career with two outstanding years just in that one 2004 season. Because in 2004, I think a big part of that offense was, like you said, we already had the offensive line, we already had the skill positions, but I think a big thing was getting Ronnie Brown and Cadillac in the flow together, making that run game that much better. Because, I mean, as you know, 2003, you know, which was my senior year, you know, we just had Cadillac, running Cadillac. But we had a number two overall pick in Ronnie Brown that they really weren't using the way they should. But I think when Al Borges came in and he saw the things that Jason Campbell could do, and he saw that he had a running back in Ronnie Brown that could catch the ball, that was probably just as good as – that was just as good as a Cadillac, and he put it all together. I just think that helped that 04 team, because, like I said, in 2003, you probably got better, and the offensive line may have gotten better in 2004, but, I mean, for the most part, it was the same players with yourself, like I said, and Marcus McNeil again, that were still great players in 2003, but I just think some of the things that we did offensively didn't help, you know, a player like Jason Campbell, or get a player like Ronnie Brown involved in the offense. So, well, I mean, I'd go tit for tat for that all day, but.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, personally, every time Ronnie Brown touched the ball, it was a highlight, and he definitely should have had the ball more. But in 05, you know, I mean, you saw what a guy, Kenny Irons, could do behind the same offensive line unit, minus two seniors that left it in the undefeated season. And he had a better season than Ronnie Brown and Carnell Williams combined in the 04 season.
You
had Brandon Jacobs behind that offensive line. So you look at what the group was able to do purely behind the offensive line, purely that Auburn was a running team, purely that the offensive line set the emotional tone for the team, and that's what Nick Fairley does. So, yes, Nick Fairley would have been the best matchup in the game. As far as Cam Newton, nobody can match up with what he does. Nobody can match up with what this guy does. I think he's the best ever, and I think he's setting a new model for black quarterbacks in the future.
Yeah. Well, we're going to head to break here. I'm keeping it real. We'll be back. Talk a little more Auburn football. Brett Favre, Jabari Jackson, and this crazy coach that tripped the player running down the sideline. I'm keeping it real. We'll be back in a minute.
your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You already get the general sports headlines and discussion on TV and radio. Tune in to The Blueprint with Randall Gatewood. Yeah, we'll cover all the general big name stuff too, but we go beyond the typical sports radio show to bring you the details you don't get anywhere else. We'll talk about the inspirational stories and the little known successes. If you want creativity, The Blueprint is the place to be. Tune in every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Are you a real sports fan? Get ready to talk football and anything else sports with Kwame Lassiter. Formerly with the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams, Kwame's got the experience, so he's prepared to talk sports with you. Every week on Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk. It's on the Voice America Sports Network every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time. Get ready for unpredictable fun and sometimes a sarcastic look at the world of sports. That's Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk on the Voice America Sports Network.
Do you love sports talk? Can't get enough sports talk? Have we got a show for you? It's about the NFL training camps, Super Bowl previews, a look at the new starting quarterbacks, and weekly key injuries. We'll take your calls and emails right on the air. Former Philadelphia Eagle James Loving is your host, and you never know who'll drop by for a co-host spot or an interview on the spot. Tune in to Loving That Sports Talk with James Loving every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Keeping It Real with Jairus McIntyre and his guests. To get in on the show today, please call 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Now, back to the show.
We back here on Keeping It Real with the big homie Troy Reddick, former Auburn standout, offensive lineman. Troy, I want to ask you, give me probably the most memorable moment that you had at Auburn, because, you know, I asked a lot of all the players this, and they have different moments. Some say it was Alabama games and this and that, but it's kind of interesting to hear the different, you know, answers that you get when you ask that question. So I want to know your most memorable moment, you know, at your time at Auburn University.
I guess, you know, it's all about personal experiences and personal goals, and I had a personal goal of coming in and being the best possible, being the most physical, the most dominant, being one of the most talked about offensive linemen from my opponents. And that clock running out in the 2004 SEC championship game, and to know that my fire was still burning and I was still driving guys off the ball and just driving them to the dirt, play after play after play after we ran the clock out, that I actually got to enjoy our win. I don't normally get to enjoy our wins and stuff. I kind of just, the body and the toll that it takes on you. So I just screamed after, you know, the clock finally ran out and all the reporters and the cameras ran in my face. And I was like, I hate them. I hate them, man. You know, I don't really have anything against those guys at Tennessee. I like their competition. But I felt like I had done everything that I came to Auburn to do. Basically, when I signed, it was an article. I had an interview, and I said, you know, they got a good young team. I want to come in and be a part of it. And I think 2-3 years, we can win the national championship. And we went undefeated that year. And I felt like we should have been in the national championship. But I had already known by that time that we weren't going to leapfrog Oklahoma and USC, even though Oklahoma played a 5-6 Iowa State team in the championship game.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, that was a great year. I mean, I can remember that. And luckily now, you know, these boys are getting the opportunity to go out against a good Oregon team. Kind of talk about that matchup, because I've seen Oregon play a lot. They got a really good team, I think, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they got speed galore. Got speed all over the place. Start with LaMichael James. And I know you analyze football a lot, especially in the trenches, the offensive and defensive line matchups. What do you see from, I guess, their defensive line going up against our big physical offensive line and vice versa?
Basically, this is college football epitomized. This will be the biggest stage. This will be one of the highest-rated games ever. And everything that we have ever thought and all our faith and the religion behind football will culminate on January 10th in the National Championship game. I mean, basically, you have the speed and the flash of the West Coast. You have the power and the physical dominance of the Southeast. And they're gonna clash head to head. I mean, they have good speed on defense, but at the same time, even though this is a spread running team, then it's not a whole lot of running outside. You know, Terry McCaleb is the main guy for that. So most of the running is actually in between the tackles. Most of the schemes, because you want to drive and get those couple and 3 yards. I think this offensive line from Auburn will be able to push their guys off the ball, and I hope on the edge on defense that our guys will be able to corral their speed guys.
Yes, yeah, because like I said, with that being said, they have a very good quarterback that can run the ball as well. Obviously not a Cam Newton size-wise, but he does have speed, and the Michael James does have speed, and he's a tough back. I mean, people don't realize, like you said, they run in between the tackles as well, because even though he's like 175 pounds soaking wet, he's a tough running back that hits the hole hard. But, I mean, obviously I think it's going to be, you know, it'll be a different ball game when you're playing a team from the SEC with a big Nick Fairley and Mike Blanc and all those big boys that we have on the defensive line. So it should be different, but – you know, they have some talent over there, so it's going to be a tough matchup for our defense that kind of at times been lackadaisical, but the last, you know, game and a half, they've kind of shown the way Auburn usually plays defense from the times we were there, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no doubt Nick Fairley will get to the quarterback. When a player makes the decision that he is the most physically dominating person on the field, nobody has a chance to stop him because they don't feel like that about themselves. So he will get to Darren Thomas. I think Darren Thomas is going to be an outstanding quarterback, not just for Oregon, but college football's sake, black quarterback's sake. And he will be given the opportunity to show that he should be the next up. He should be next up if he can put on a good performance against Auburn.
Yeah, because like I said, this is all, the same way it's only Cam Newton's first year starting Auburn. This is only his first year. So, and to do what he's done in the first year of him starting is – it's pretty tremendous because this kid, like I said, going in the spring, they didn't know. Masoli got kicked out. He came in and, you know, did his thing. And as the weeks got on, he got better and better. And he has a great touchdown-interception ratio. He can run. You know, he's leading that crazy offense with all those plays that they have and being only his first year. So, like you said, I mean, as time, he's only going to get better with time. So, if James sticks around, you know, for the next couple of years or for the next year at least, and they get some of the other running backs that they have going, I mean, I don't see them slowing down anytime soon, especially with him playing quarterback, because he seems like the perfect quarterback for their system, kind of like the way Dennis Dixon was when he was there.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, you want to look at the landscape and the opportunities for a black quarterback out here right now. You can start with ESPN before the college football season kicked out. They had invited a couple of the Pac-10 quarterbacks to Bristol. And who you had up there was Andrew Luck. You had Barkley from USC. You had Foles from Arizona. And you had Jake Locker. Darren Thomas was nowhere in the fold. He wasn't weren't checked for him. Not even if Oregon did finish the season at a good standing last year in the Rose Bowl, lost to Ohio State. They weren't checking for that guy. And what you got is a young juggernaut in the making.
Yeah. And we kind of talked about that a little bit last week. Ron Mack was on the line and earlier. I don't think he's on the line anymore right now, but he's on the line earlier. And he always tends to – I always mess with him, and we always mess with him on the show because he's always like, you know, the black quarterback. They do the black quarterback wrong. And I haven't had a chance, obviously, like I said earlier, I haven't had a chance to have you on the show and ask you what you thought and what your perception and what you kind of see, you know, from the outside looking in and about the African-American quarterback, as like you just said. Do you think that going in, it's always they look at it differently? Or do you think nowadays, since there's so many black quarterbacks, you know, in the college football ranks, Not talking about the NFL right now,
but just in the college football ranks. Well, now let's talk about the NFL, just in general, for African-American quarterback, because you just brought up the point. And at Bristol, they invited some of the top quarterbacks in the Pac-10, which were the top returning quarterbacks last year in the Pac-10. So I can understand that. But do you think that there's favoritism or they look at the African-American quarterback differently than they do a white quarterback?
Oh, yes. That's definitely all I was thinking about was the perception of that a black quarterback is and received his starting position because of his athletic ability as opposed to his ability to play the quarterback position.
Okay, yeah, because that's what I want. That's because different people think different things, and I can kind of agree with that because whenever you have an African-American quarterback back there, if you have a black brother back there, the first thing they're going to think is, we know he can run. Whereas the sake of somebody like a Jamarcus Russell, he was an African-American quarterback, but in college he was a pure drop-back passer that couldn't run if his life depended on it, you know? Or even a Jason Campbell that can run a little bit, but he's more of a drop-back passer. So there are African-American quarterbacks that are just drop-back passers. A lot of people get the notion and they think that if you see an African-American quarterback back there, he's going to be able to run, you know, like a Cam Newton. Now, Cam Newton can run, but if you look at it, he sits in the pocket as long as he can to try to see what he has downfield, then he runs when he has to, unless it's a design run, you know. So there's different, you know, sections and what people think or whatnot. But for the most part, if you're back there quarterback, you're gonna have to be able to, you know, sling the rock a little bit, is what I think.
Oh yeah, and the main reason it's an issue because of the praise and the attention that we give quarterbacks in general.
You say the attention that we give them?
Yeah. We put quarterbacks, the Football Society puts quarterbacks on a pedestal. So there is inference from the black community to say, hey, well, this guy is just as good and more impactful and had a better and more talented season than this other guy, but he's not receiving the same attention or praise for his abilities purely because possibly it's the black quarterback. It's the fear of the black quarterback or the white hero losing his place to the black knight. The white king losing his place to the black knight.
Yeah. And like I said, with so many African-American quarterbacks in the college ranks, I don't even see it as a problem in college. I mean, they may say things, and they may be things, but I see so many black quarterbacks in college. Now, the National Football League, it's evolving, and there's becoming more and more. Obviously started back from when, you know, it was great players were from Warren Moon and Jeff Blake and Randall Cunningham doing their thing. And as time has come along, you know, it's been a Michael Vick and Steve McNair, players of that nature. So it's coming along, but I still think it's a little bit different in the National Football League.
Well, you see, I look at it as a cycle. I mean, it seems like all these black quarterbacks are grouped in around the same couple of years. They come in a couple of years after each other and around each other. And so you say Jeff Blake, Randall Cunningham, Warren Moon, and then you jump to Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Aaron from the Saints, basically. They were in that same little group, kind of bunched together. And then in college, you're talking about mid-90s, T. Martin, Joe Hamilton, Charlie Ward, those guys. It was cyclical. It was a cycle. Right now, the cycle doesn't seem to be as apparent because teams all across the country have black quarterbacks here and black quarterbacks there. But this very well may be a big cycle. This may be a cycle where you have a lot of them come through and it tapers off again because the game of football is cyclical, changing from the passing game to the running game, well, from the running game to the passing game, then from the running game back to the running game again when you have the wing T coming into prevalence and then going back to the big-time passing game, the running gun, the fun and gun, all of that stuff. It's cyclical. Football, sports, it's all cyclical.
Yeah. And I think with that being said, with the game evolving to more of a spread offense and the spread offense is coming to the game of college, I think it's going to evolve a little bit to the pro ranks, and then that's going to make it to where we need more athletic, agile quarterbacks, and I think that'll bring a whole other breed into the National Football League, you know, a la Cam Newton or Vince Young or, you know, Darren Thomas or any kind of player of that nature. But all from the African-American quarterbacks, I want to kind of flip to
quarterback that's not African American, but played in almost 300 straight games. Now, Brett Favre, do you think he'll accomplish again? Because, I mean, this man has played since, I'm saying, 1992 and it didn't miss a game. I just think that's crazy. I mean, just to know that we played the game, you played offensive line, I played receiver. But regardless of position, if you could play a game for that many years and play every, I just don't see that happening again. Do you see that happening again? I know Peyton Manning's up to 200 and I think 205, but do you ever see that happening again?
I don't really see it happening again. I don't think somebody should want to. I mean, you look at his personal life and him suffering from addiction to painkillers. It's a result of this streak.
Yeah. I never thought about like that. Brings up a good
point.
You're
not going to take things to help your performance or aid in your ability to perform.
That's true. That's true. I never even thought about it like that because, with that being said, if he's continuously trying to perform and trying to, you know, keep this streak going, he's going to do whatever he has to do. And if that takes getting addicted to painkillers, I mean, that's what it took for him to overcome and these injuries and continue to just keep playing on the field. And, I mean, that's an amazing feat, man. I mean, I could see somebody like a Peyton Manning because I never, I mean, from the way – every year they say he's down to they don't have the receivers and all the players are hurt and he continues to win and he continues to stay on the streak of 300-yard passing games and all that. I mean, I wouldn't doubt Peyton Manning, but I just think in this day and age, it's going to be real difficult for him to play another, six years without missing a game. So we'll see how that goes.
Somebody's not going to care about the rules and the safety and the precautions that the NFL takes to protect quarterbacks, and they're going to put a hurting on them one day.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break here on Keeping It Real. I'm going to put me and Troy Reddick here on Keeping It Real. We'll be back in a minute.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Super Bowl champ Lionel Dalton is taking to the internet airwaves with his own brand of sports talk. You'll go inside the mind of the players and find out if blacklisting really happens, what their thoughts are on training camps, where the former NFL players are now, and why being drafted by the wrong NFL team can kill a promising player's career. Lionel will also cover what's up with the Baltimore Ravens. Tune in to Sports Talk with Lionel Dalton live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. It's more than a sports show. Tune in every Friday for End of the Bench with Tony Bowie. Tony knows and does it all. Whether it's sports, business, or politics, the discussion all comes to focus in one place. You'll hear from the personalities as well as the everyday people, each bringing their own perspective to the discussion. This is a weekly forum that you'll want to be a part of. End of the Bench with Tony Bowie airs live every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. That's 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Listen to Sports Talk at the Positive Pub every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. Gil Tyree talks to sports newsmakers, playmakers, and story breakers. You, the hardcore, interactive, and novice fan, can join the show via your phone calls and emails. Sample what's good, right, and positive about the world of sports every week. Begin your week in a positive way with Sports Talk from the Positive Pub. Be here every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Keeping It Real with Jairus McIntyre and his guests. To get in on the show today, please call 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, as we were going to break, I mean, we were on break. I was talking to Troy. We were just talking about a couple different things. And something that he brought to my attention was Cam Newton being left off the, was it the Writers All-American team? Is that the particular one, Troy?
Yeah, Football Writers Association.
Yeah, being left off the Football Writers Association first team All-American. I mean, this guy unanimously was a Heisman Trophy winner on every All-American team, Walter Camp Player of the Year, the Maxwell Award. He's won pretty much every award. Now, yes, he does, not saying he does. Well, yes, he deserves everything that he got. And obviously with the writers and them watching the whole football season, I think that they should see that obviously he's the best player in college football. Now, he was left off that for some odd reason, and Troy kind of brought that to my attention, and I did see that, but I didn't ever look into it. Troy, what's your perspective on something like that happening, knowing this man was the unanimous Heisman winner for the most part?
Yeah, well, my take on it is the writers, sports writers, have a particular role in this vehicle of not just college football and professional sports, but the mystique of sports in general. And their particular role is kind of to keep people honest. And at the same time, they try to prognosticate to give themselves more validity on the subjects that they talk about because they don't have it. They didn't play it. They didn't play at these places. They don't have direct knowledge of things. They hear rumors just like fans hear rumors, and they make decisions based off of it. And I basically see a situation where ESPN playing Pony Express right after the Heisman ceremony is kind of setting the stage. They are allowing us to see everything that's going on, and it's up to us basically to put the pieces together. Now, what I see is the facade of amateur football has begun to crumble. The power brokers have used the Trojan horse of the NCAA's death penalty to SMU to build an underground machine that promotes amateurism on the outside and uncompensated professional working class on the inside, successfully controlling the multi-billionaire billion-dollar industry. I mean, basically what you have right there is they put the death penalty on SMU even though they knew a lot of other schools were doing the same thing because the NCAA had lost favor with the public. They had turned into the negative image that they were trying to stray away from, and they cannot abandon success for their morals. You know, this is an industry, this is a business, so they have to keep that money flowing. They have to keep building new facilities and everything that's around. But basically what they did with that situation back in the 80s was they got the boosters out a little bit only to open the door for agents, because if the boosters aren't giving these guys money, the agents are giving these guys money. But the fans and the people need to believe that the NCAA is living up to his mission to be a broad-based sports programming and to keep the participation of amateurism going on in college sports in general. The NCAA is all about participation, and so the sports that don't make money are only there because they have their tax-exempt status that says that they will keep participation in college up. They basically had to entice people to come to college with these sports. That's what they're saying, that they entice people to come to college with these sports. They support their organization with these sports. The fans want to see it as something organic and something that happens because people work hard and people love what they do. And that's not the case. That's not the case. The facade is basically slowly crumbling because you have the football writers saying that this is wrong. He shouldn't be eligible. He should be out of there. But the Heisman, the epitome of what success on this level means, the trophy was still given to him. And you can have I have an image in my head of that of the Heisman being a Trojan horse in itself, filled with money being pushed across the table to Cam Newton. Basically, not saying that he took money. Now, that's not the image, that's not the message that I'm trying to portray, that you want to think that the Heisman is based solely on excellence and integrity, but it says on-field performance. It says on-field performance, and they have to do this. Cameron Newton has to win the Heisman for the NCAA to keep doing what they're doing, but at the same time, they have to portray it in a way to keep their fans in the seats because their fans will abandon it if they don't believe that they're better than the guys that's on the field.
True. And I can agree with that. And with that Pony Express airing right after, and I kind of thought about it, so it's kind of ironic they would put on a two-hour show of an institution that received the death penalty back in the 80s. and showing everything that was going on in the world of college football from every college. Like you said, not just SMU. But all the colleges were doing it then. They just made an example out of SMU. So with that being said, it was so ironic that they would put that on after probably, like I said again, one of the greatest college football players in the history of college football has been going through this whole turmoil throughout the year from what they said his father did or didn't do. But they showed the death penalty and what could be done to somebody that receives monies from boosters or whatever else right after you have has watched the presentation of a player getting the Heisman Trophy that has gone through the things that he did the whole year with his father and the things that have been going on. So I just thought it was completely ironic that they would put that on right after that. I mean, they couldn't put that on a Sunday night. They couldn't put that on a Wednesday night. They had to put that on after a tremendous achievement from a great football player that has been going through a lot of things. They put that on right after that. I just think that this shows they're painting a picture of, okay, now he won the Heisman, but don't do what they said his father did, or you get the death penalty, or it'll be tainted, or you have to give it back. So it was just tremendously ironic to me that they did it like that. But yeah, ESPN, they're going to do what they do. Maybe they were trying to present a message to the kids at home and to boosters and to the people, you know, across America, because it was a great show. And I learned a lot of things through that documentary or through that movie that I didn't know about the College of SMU. Obviously, I knew that boosters paid players back in the day like it wasn't nothing, but I didn't know the whole ordeal that went down with SMU. So it was a very interesting, and it was a very good story to see. But obviously, I think they did SMU wrong, and I kind of think that they scheduled the program, I guess, knowing that a lot of people that watched the Heisman presentation would stick around and kind of watch this, you know, pony excess kind of thing that they had going on right after the Heisman ceremony. But it was just crazy. But I mean, like I said, I enjoyed the show to kind of see what was going on back then and what happened to SMU really. But I mean, for you to tell me that those schools around them, like Oklahoma's and the Arkansas's and all the colleges that were in that same conference competing against SMU weren't doing the same thing, you got to be nuts. You got to be kidding me. I don't know if SMU was flaunting it around more than everybody else, but for them to get the death penalty and then nobody else probably even get a probation, it just shows that they're kind of picking and choosing what they want to do, who they were going to make an example out of, and roll with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a basic Kansas City shuffle situation. They're going to throw your attention on that, but what the NCAA is really enforcing that. They're talking out the side of their neck. The NCAA supports that system because that system supports them. Throw the attention on them, because you can think about guys, you think about UNLV back in the 80s. These guys are getting private planes to the Forum, you know, going to Lakers games and being supported by all these mafia guys in the casinos, Randall Cunningham and his wife driving around in Benzes and stuff. I mean, that was going on. That was apparent. Everybody knew about it.
Mm-hmm. So they didn't get the death penalty. So like you said, somebody was made an example out of. And then once that happened, you haven't really seen it anymore. Yeah, Reggie Bush got a house and all this, but you haven't seen blatantly people just showing off and flaunting and be like, okay, we doing it now, so what? Because they know about that death penalty. But if SMU was never made an example out of, I think it would probably still be going on in the world of college football today. And then with that being said, like what you just said, that would take the NCAA out of it that would take the agents out of it, because you wouldn't need an agent, because the booster would be doing everything that an agent would be doing from the time you're 18.
Yep.
So the NCAA kind of has, like you said, kicked the boosters out a little bit and now brought the agents in. Because from the time you're 18 and you step on a campus, if an agent was allowed to provide for you and give you money, the whole team would have an agent, and then you wouldn't need boosters. So that you brought up a very great point there. I never really thought about that, but I know knowing you, Troy, will always have another twist of things. So I'm glad I had you on here, because now that's something to kind of think about and kind of move forward to on the upcoming Keeping It Reels.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll just see how everything goes, and hopefully this whole Cam Newton situation kind of stays how it is, and Auburn's good, and everybody's good, and nothing was truly taken, and nothing was done wrong, because, I mean, I truly believe that if something was done wrong, he wouldn't be out there on the field at Auburn, because, you know how compliance is at Auburn. They don't play that. So I think, I think everything's scot-free, and everything will stand, and he'll be good, but to put that pony excess on with SMU right after the Heisman ceremony is kind of like, I don't know. I think somebody has something to do with that.
Yeah, definitely was in the programming. But yeah. War Eagle!
Hey! That's all you can say. Hey, he on there. We all the way live, man. You know, the Auburn Tigers, we doing it big. 13-0, one more to go. It's going to be a big one, though, man, out there in Glendale, man. We got to see, man, that Oregon, they got that high-powered offense. So we got to see some of the DBs hold up out there in the secondary, and we can, hold off the big pass plays and kind of contain little Michael James, because if he getting that out in that open, he running, he moving, he gone,
Yep.
That's what it is. We out here keeping it real. We about to get out of here. I have my co-host on the line, Big Troy Reddick, former Auburn great, and keeping it real. Next week, same time, every Tuesday. We out of here.
Thanks for listening this week. Tune in to Keeping It Real with Jarris McIntyre again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Until then, keep it real, real, real. Keep it real.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.